Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On April 15th, seven prisoners were killed and 22 were injured after violence broke out at the Lee Correctional Institution, a maximum security prison in South Carolina. Those who died were killed by fellow prisoners who had homemade weapons, including knives. A witness told the Associated Press that bodies were literally stacked on top of each other. The witness also reported that hours after the violence started, correctional officers and medical personnel failed to treat the wounded. It took more than 7 hours for authorities to control the situation. The inmates who died were identified as Corey Scott, age 38, Eddie Casey Gaskins, 32, Raymond Angelo Scott, 28, Demonte Rivera, 24, Michael Millage, 44, Cornelius McClary, 33, and Joshua Jenkins, also 33. Several lawsuits that have since been filed in connection with the deadly riots say the prison has a long history of overcrowding, understaffing, and poor maintenance. In response to that riot, men and women incarcerated in prisons across the nation launched a national prison strike on August 21st. It's scheduled to run through September 9th. And the press release from the jailhouse Lawyers Speak says, quote, seven comrades lost their lives during a senseless uprising that could have been avoided had the prison not been so overcrowded from the greed wrought by mass incarceration and a lack of respect for human life that is embedded in our nation's penal ideology. These men and women are demanding humane living conditions, access to rehabilitation, sentencing reform, and the end of modern-day slavery, end quote. Joining me to discuss the national prison strike and the demands of the men and women in federal immigration and state prisons are two guests. Amani Sawari is the official outside media representative of Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. She writes about prison reform and criminal justice issues. And Amani Sawari joins me on the line from Seattle, Washington. We're going to have Amani in just a minute. Joining me in studio is Bilal Mafundi Ali, coordinator of the Bay Area National Prison Strike Solidarity Committee. Bilal is a longtime activist and organizer. When he was a teenager, he joined the Black Panther Party for self-defense as a member of his high school's Black Student Union. He's also worked against police abuse and is an organizer with the Coalition on Homelessness. Hi, Bilal. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me here. I was an organizer with the Coalition.
Was an organizer. Well, you've done amazing work on Skid Row and so much other work with the homeless crisis.
Yeah, I'm now with Poor Magazine, which is also a homeless-led, self-determined, landless movement. I like to make clear to the audience when you were earlier reporting about the melee at the Lee Correctional Facility, and it did actually take the prison staff 7 hours to quell that. They allowed it to go on for all those hours. They watched people assaulted, and they watched people die. They watched people bleed out. They didn't do anything. They just sat there and watched it happen. And more likely, this mainly was, as Jailhouse Lawyers Speak has said, and we've heard from other prisoners, was instigated by the prisons through the inhumane conditions and treatment of prisoners.
A number of people who were hurt have told their stories. I mean, I've been reading a lot of articles. What happened inside that prison was brutal.
Right, right.
What strikes you about what the people in the prison have said about what happened?
Well, another thing I want to make clear, what happened at Lee is not unique to Lee. Mm. This happens, but we do not get any reports about it. The prison administrations locked down all type of information. For instance, the last prison hunger strike in California, it took 3 weeks for the prison administrations to even acknowledge there was a strike. So this is not unique. There have been uprisings and other melees, a lot of uprisings where prisoners are resisting their inhumane treatment. We're getting from some folks that death toll may actually be higher. And so we meet any reports coming out of the prison administration with skepticism. Mm-hmm. And we encourage people to do their own examinations. So we're getting word from actually the prisoners. And we've been told that death toll could be a lot higher than has been reported.
Now we are joined by Amani Sawari, the official outside media representative of Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. Hi, Amani. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, Amani. We were just talking about what happened inside of the Lee Correctional Institute. This is the maximum security prison in South Carolina. This horrific riot took place on April 15th. What have you learned about what actually happened there?
Well, the biggest thing that I learned about what happened there is, like Ball says, it wasn't unique, and this can also happen at any institution. So it was really important because the conditions that were set up there for that violence to occur and for so many lives to be lost, one every single hour that officials waited to do something about the violence. This can happen anywhere. Lockers can be taken away anywhere and agitate prisoners. Shifts in rooming assignments can happen anywhere to cause conflict. Prisons, in the way that they're designed and with their lack of rehabilitation, are breeding grounds for violence, and officials are complicit to this violence because, one, it adds to their argument that, oh, these prisoners need more restrictions. They shouldn't have access to speaking on the outside. They can't be controlled when they're actually agitating these conditions. And two, it gives prisoners blocking from being able to be seen on the outside in a specific way if they're not given the access to speak. That is why jailhouse lawyers called the strike, and that is why prisoners are unifying together right now, because they want to speak about what's going on, and they deserve to. They're the ones in the middle of this, mm-hmm. and their lives depend on these changes.
So let's talk about what is happening across the country. This national prison strike started on August 21st. It's finally starting to get national media attention. Amani, how are you keeping track of who's actually striking and how correction officials are responding?
So we're doing, on our end, our own strike tracking, because also, as was mentioned, prison officials can't be trusted to document the progress of what's going on. They have a different agenda. They are trying to repress prisoners' voices and silence their actions in an attempt to cover up the inhumane conditions that affect our criminal justice system. So they have a completely different agenda, which is why we don't look to them as a source for confirming the actions that are happening on the inside. However, we do urge people to still call in and ask the question, is there a lockdown going on right now? Is there strike activity? So that officials do know that our eyes are on the inside. But we get our reports from incarcerated people, from their family and their friends and other supporters who are following the strike. And that's through the direct contact with inmates. They're the ones who mail in. They're the ones who send in the numbers and the pictures and the photos and what's going on. And those are the reports that we trust from the people on the inside, because they're the ones leading this and taking the risk to do these actions.
Do we have any idea how many prisoners are striking and how many prisons are involved in this?
To count the number of prisons, if I were to say really quickly off the top of my head, at least 40, and that's like on the low end. Hmm. We've got confirmed actions from 11 areas, one being in Canada, but 10 states in the United States right now. 17 have pledged to participate. We are waiting to get those confirmed reports from all of our states before they're all posted. But there is a full list and description, a report back of what's happened already since the 21st that we've gotten in. We've got actions in California, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Washington, Ohio, Colorado, Indiana, New Mexico, Florida, and Nova Scotia, Canada. And so there are multiple prisons within those areas, and some of them, like the Tacoma Detention Center, have 200 inmates who are participating in a hunger strike.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there are hundreds of inmates across the country who have come together to participate in hunger strikes, work stoppages, boycotts, and sit-ins.
Bilal, hundreds of inmates in one prison. Talk about the power of this strike. Have we ever seen anything like this?
Yes, actually, the Attica Rebellion, but not currently. The catalyst, I would say, would be, well, and contemporaneously will be the two California prison hunger strikes, which actually exposed a lot of those conditions, but also educated on prisoners organizing around those conditions. And we go back. The prisoners, the prisoners are organizing and resisting against inhumane treatment and conditions that they're experiencing while being incarcerated. And where you have oppression, that's going to result in resistance. And they are organizing, resisting against these conditions and treatment, similar to the 60s with George Jackson on the way up to the Attica Rebellion. They are organizing, resisting against those same inhumane conditions, treatments that folks were doing back in the 60s and 70s. So their resistance and organizing gives expression to that dialectic. It's become so horrific in there. I mean, prison's horrific. I'm a formerly incarcerated person. Prison is not nice. And some people tend to think, well, one prison is more lean and one prison is more better. You have what's called privilege yards. And that, for me, that's an oxymoron. How can you be privileged while you're locked in, while you're enslaved, actually? So I'm jazzed about it. I'm jazzed that it's coming to this fruition. I've worked many years working with prisoners, organizing with prisoners, organizing support for prisoners, and that's key to it, outside support. That is very key. As Imani was saying, you know, getting the word out, getting the word in, and this is the reason why we had an action on August 25th outside of San Quentin to show and express our support for what's going on inside. But we're so jazzed. I mean, I'm sure those numbers are a lot higher. We don't want to be throwing things out there to people right now, but I'm sure they're higher. They're not being reported. Some prison officials that came out in the press saying there's no strike activity going on whatsoever. Some of the participants and leaders are already been put on into solitary confinement, been cut off from communication, and have been threatened that if they are participants, they're going to suffer retaliation by the prison officials.
You brought up a number of points there, Bilal. Can we talk about the conditions inside? We've had a number of former prisoners on the show, but it's important to just go over this again and again. You mentioned solitary confinement. I mean, some people we've had on say even one or two nights behind bars is a traumatic experience. You've got, it's incredibly hot in many places. There's no air moving around. You've got expired food, completely unhealthy food. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you have the violence, the potential sexual abuse, rape. What else?
And you have guard violence also, too, which usually behind a lot of that, right? Prison officials have a legacy instigating hostilities between various racial groups. There's a legacy. People know that, right? They do this order, I guess, to keep their employment or for some sadistic purposes. We heard about the gladiator fights and so forth. Conditions, talk about solitary confinement. This is a human rights violation. The United Nations has said that solitary confinement is a form of torture. So we're saying our people are being tortured. And this is one of the things they're resisting. So the United States has declared that this is torture, yet the prisons are still practicing that. So they're under conditions of torture. You said about the food. There are some instances where the prisoners are seeing packaging that says not for human consumption, and they're being forced to eat this food. Their shower privileges are being taken away. Many prisoners, because of lockdowns, they issue these lockdowns. A lot of times it's because the prison's understaffed. People are sitting, lingering in their cells for 23 hours a day or more. So the whole conditioning of prison is basically, as through my experience and others, the condition of prisons are geared to dehumanize a person. We're returning people back, well, not me, but they're returning people back on the streets broken, you know, damaged. And this is what prisons are doing, you know. In California, they have what's called the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. I refer to it as the California Department of Concentration Camps and Repression. When we were out at San Quentin, a family member of an incarcerated person that spoke pointed out to me, when she's been coming there for years, and she actually lives in Marin County, they had the sign up there, says California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. That sign has been taken down by the prison. It's a joke. It's a farce. No one is being rehabilitated. And that is one of the demands that the prisoners are making, that rehabilitated services and programs be initiated in there so they can't return as productive community members.
Another demand, talking about the condition, is humane living conditions. Just to stick on this one for a couple more minutes, Imani, what would you add about the conditions inside prisons?
The conditions inside prison, there's so much to add. Even with the way that their clothes are washed, every single aspect of living as a human being is sort of broken down into something that can really tear a person down and isn't beneficial for the development of a person and makes them feel devalued and dehumanized. So even the way that the clothes are washed, there's a central washing system and everyone's clothes are balled up and put into bags, and maybe 50 bags of clothes are put into this giant washing machine where it's just the dirt and the grime going around. Nothing's being done efficiently. Nothing's being done with care or with value to a person. And then clothes are giving back smelling just as bad, if not worse, than the clothes before. There aren't vocational programs. There aren't as many college partnerships with prisons anymore. There aren't many lecturers going into prisons anymore. Prisoners aren't able to choose jobs that make them feel valuable, that have them doing work that can gain skills that they feel valued in doing and that they can transfer to the outside. Conditions with even talking on the phone or having access to talk on the phone, the price of talking on the phone, not being able to communicate with loved ones, restrictions on building relationships on the outside with family and friends and spouses and your children, all of these things are being broken down that are essential to the development of a person, and especially the development of a person who suffered from trauma, as many of the people have who are incarcerated and who need help in healing from that trauma in order to become better. Instead of being given the resources to heal from a trauma, they're constantly reminded that they're not valued as a human being, and then they're constantly sort of banged with this message and oppressed and dehumanized and abused in so many facets from their staff to other prisoners around them. So it's a really, really hard place, and this isn't what serving time should look like in our society. It's really a disgrace to the label of corrections or being a correctional system. It's not a correctional system at all, and we really need to interrogate this and find a way to correct this. The solutions already exist. The treatment programs, the rehab facilities, the classes that prisoners could take advantage of already exist. We just need to bring those things back together and bring those resources back into the prisons and really shine a light on what's happening so that more people can be involved in this conversation and bring the changes that need to happen immediately.
Imani Sawari is the official outside media representative of Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. She writes extensively about prison reform and criminal justice issues. Bilal Mufundi Ali is the coordinator of the Bay Area National Prison Strike Solidarity Committee and a longtime activist and organizer. Today we are talking about the nationwide prison strike. It began on August 21st. It's scheduled to run through September 9th. There are actions happening in at least 40 prisons that we know of across the country. And many times it's really hard to get information out. If you have any questions or comments for our guests, if you are involved in any kind of prison activism, if you have spent time in prisons and you have any stories to share, what are your thoughts? This issue is just getting so much more attention now with so many books being written, prisoners speaking out. Actually, I'll talk to you about this in a minute, Bilal, but about 500 people showed up, more than 500, to that San Quentin rally, right? This was a big... Was it?
I would say approximately 300.
300, okay. Yeah. I was just reading from the Bayview paper.
And then, while we were there, many people... were continually showing up. And our original area where we were going to stage it, the police were there and they blocked it off where people couldn't park their car. So we went on to the west side. So people were calling me, hey, where are you guys at? So they were coming. And as we were leaving, because we had buses that we had to get back to West Oakland, we had chartered buses for people. So we had to leave. But people remained it there, and as we were leaving, we saw more people coming in. So it might have ended up at 500, but while I was there, it was around approximately 300 people, which was great.
And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Bilal, we were talking earlier about the hunger strikes in prisons in California. And those were huge. What came of that? Did we see many changes?
We saw some concessions. Around 1,400 people were released off out of solitary confinement. And there were other agreements made with the strikers and the CDCR. Right now, there's a lawsuit with some of those principals involved in that lawsuit, the ASGAR suit that's going on. That actually, there was a rally on the 21st that kicked off the prison strike at the federal building and Philip Burton Federal Building in San Francisco, because we're seeing that a lot of those agreements that were made, well, the CDCR is now reneging. They are reneging on those agreements. And some of the principals that were involved in the prison strike that were part of the settlement thing about ending solitary confinement, some of them are now being placed back into solitary confinement right now. So we see how far reform can go. And, you know, I just wanted to touch on that, because when we're talking about prisons are institutions of slavery. When chattel slavery was abolished in this country, the conditions, treatment of the former slaves did not change. And before that, before the Civil War, the prisons were majority white people, because black people were too valuable on the plantations. Right after that, with Jim Crow laws, after Reconstruction, after the Civil War, Jim Crow laws were implemented, and we start seeing the prison population related to black folks start growing. And basically, black folks were placed back on a plantation. And we talk about now in academic circles, people are having this discussion around the 13th Amendment. How it did not abolish slavery. Mm. Actually, what the 13th Amendment did, it reformed slavery. I'm a prison abolitionist. I don't feel that prisons are needed in this society. Prisons are obsolete. Prisons are an institution of slavery. We want to abolish slavery in this country once and for all. Many of the prisoners are not that involved in this are not particularly prison abolitionists, but they're not calling for opening the gates and letting all the prisoners out. They are addressing those conditions, horrific conditions, because they are human beings. They are human rights violations, and by virtue of them being human beings, they shouldn't be treated in any other manner. But at the same time, we do need relief. We do need relief for the prisoners, and a lot of areas, that's where reform falls into. But we cannot think that reform is the end all and just leave it at that. We got to continue to push and push where we no longer need prison. This society, where this society doesn't produce people that have to enter into the concentration camps.
Bilal Mafundi Ali is coordinator of the Bay Area National Prison Strike Solidarity Committee. He's a longtime activist and organizer. Amani Sawari is the official outside media representative of Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about the nationwide prison strike, which is happening, as far as we know, in at least 40 prisons. This was sparked after 7 prisoners were killed and 22 were injured after violence broke out on April 15th at the Lee Correctional Institution, a maximum security prison in South Carolina. As Bilal says, this is not unique to Lee. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about a conservatorship bill in California that would give county officials more authority to force people with mental illnesses into treatment or put them in the care of a guardian. Supporters say people with mental illnesses should not die on the streets untreated, but opponents argue that changing the law denies individuals their rights and increases the number of individuals forced into treatment. We'll talk about that tomorrow. And then on our media roundtable, we'll talk about what is happening in Venezuela. We will also talk about NAFTA and labor rights. Today, we are talking about the nationwide prison strike that started on August 21st and is scheduled to run through September 9th. This is currently happening in 40 prisons across the country. A number of immigrant detention centers have also joined this strike. And today, we're joined by Amani Sawari, official outside media rep of Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. We're also joined by Bilal Mafundi Ali, coordinator of the Bay Area National Prison Strike Solidarity Committee. He's a longtime activist and organizer. And let's hear from Betsy in Berkeley. Hi, Betsy. Welcome to the show.
I'll be right back. Hi. I'll be right back. I know. I'm so sorry. I was in the middle of something. Rose, thank you for this program. I'm moved and I'm horrified by what I'm hearing. I just wanted to say that I had the opportunity to visit a men's maximum security prison in Kenya when I was traveling, and they didn't know I was coming, so they didn't have a chance to put on any big, you know, pretense of conditions. And I was so amazed at the way that the people were treated there, meaning it was very positive, meaning that it was not a system based on a white over black suppression, because they were all of the same culture, they were all the same color, and the way the guards and the prisoners interacted was as comrades, as fellows who came from some of the same villages, spoke the same language, and when I arrived, they were having a day celebrating elders, and they were having singing. There was music already playing in the outdoor patio area. They thrust a guitar into my hand because I was there as a singer and said, please sing, and we all sang together. The next time I came, there was probably 15 or 20 men in the back, another back area, jamming, writing songs. They wanted help putting out a CD of their original music. And, you know, what the guards and the prison executive said is, you know, we just want to get these guys back home. You know, they made a mistake. We want to get them home, get them back into the community. And it was really incredible. And it just highlighted for me that our system is horrible and punitive and oppressive, not because prisons have to be that way, but because it's a racist system. And there's an agenda, as we know. So I just wanted to share that because it was such an important lesson for me. Thanks.
Well, thank you for calling in, Betsy. Bilal, what's your response? And have you looked at other systems around the world?
Yes, we have. And prisons, again, I'm going to say this again, prisons are not nice places. Right? Any nice thing about prisons is brought forth by the prisoners themselves. Prisoners is a hostile environment. Again, talking about slavery. Once you're in prison, you are a slave of the state. That's what another thing the 13th Amendment did. It abolished slavery by individuals. You became a slave of the state now. And they're not set up to, again, rehabilitate people. They're there to punish people. We do not need prisons. We need another system, a more equitable society, and those things that prevent that from happening. And I just want to bring this up. I don't want to forget this. Again, there are many people in prison that are for a social crime. Well, we also have political prisoners in this country, too. This government denies the fact that we have political prisoners. I came out of the era of the 60s, the Black Liberation Movement, and people like Mumia Abdul-Jabbar, Mutulu Shakur, and others who have been languishing in there, some over 45 years. We just had three release, one of the members, Debbie Africa, the Africa family. So we see de-escalation of the prison population, especially with black people, during the 60s and 70s, of those struggles for civil rights and struggle for self-determination that was going on in this country. Laws were being passed saying the war on crime, the war on drugs, which was actually a war on communities, because prisons also serves as a counter-insurgent method also, too. And we see who's in prison. We didn't have super max security prisons until those people who were jailed and framed because of the COINTEL program, they start building these super max prisons to keep those prisoners away from other prisoners, afraid they were going to radicalize and organize those prisoners. Mm-hmm. What's radicalizing prisoners is the horrific conditions that exist in prison, right? That's the dialectic. You want to give credit where credit's due. Because of those policies in prisons, those policies are radicalizing the prisoners right now. And we're looking at a powder keg. We're looking at a powder keg right now because this can only go so long where human beings resist. They cannot tolerate it anymore. The prisons are creating more conditions of antagonism. And they, if this explosion comes, just like what we saw in Lee and other facilities, that is on the part of the prison administration and prison policies in this country, not the prisoners themselves. The prisoners are reacting to this. That's just any human being. You and I would react the same way if someone was treating us like that on the outside. Mm. So this is what we're seeing. But again, I want to make clear to people, there are no nice prisons. I'm glad to hear this story that she did. But like she said, they didn't know she was coming. So, yeah.
Well, and to your point about overcrowding, Bilal, the United States has 2.2 million citizens behind bars currently today. And we've done shows about how the number of men in prison is actually coming down, but the number of women in prison is going up.
Yes.
And let's talk more about the overcrowding, Imani. Tell us about that. I mean, we hear excerpts here and there, but what does it look like across the country? Because a lot of the lawsuits that have been filed in relation to the Lee Correctional Institute riots specifically focused on underfunding and overcrowding.
Yeah, so our system is warehousing human bodies. That's what it is. It's not about providing every individual with the treatment needed in order to be prepared to go back out into society. It's about how can we fit more people in and keep them in longer, and that is brought about by the companies that are making so much money off of this super cheap, often free labor source. They want to know that these prisons are going to be full. They have the private prisons especially have these contracts that say, okay, I will bring my my business here, but the prison has to be at least 80% full. So then you've got companies like Wendy's, McDonald's lobbying for higher prison sentences because their uniforms and their plastic containers and cutlery are made there, and that keeps costs down extraordinarily. So these overcrowded conditions lead to less funding for these rehabilitative programs and classes because we can't offer them to effectively to these huge groups of people. It means that the gyms are filled with bunks. It means that there's no space, that units. I have a friend in Michigan who was in a unit that was for two people that now had eight people in it. So imagine a grown man and seven other grown men having to live amongst each other throughout the entire day, having to coordinate their days. When one wants time to be alone, how difficult is that going to be? What conflicts arise there with personalities? You don't know the people that you're forced to live amongst. And it creates these conditions for violence and for abuse. Again, overcrowding is a super dangerous issue, and it's not about building more prisons. That's not the solution. The solution is to bring people out of prison. There are already hundreds of thousands of people that are prepared to come back into society, that are rehabilitated, that have learned from their past and want to make better lives and need to be there for their families and for their children and for their spouses. And they're ready to come out. So we need to make policies that directly impact those communities that are ready to come out, because it's not about building more prisons or trying to find more space in the showers and the closets to fit more people in, because that's what they're doing now. That's what's happening with this issue.
You brought up the companies that exploit prison labor, Imani. One of the demands calls for an end to prison labor and for prisoners to be paid a prevailing wage. On your website, you have a database of companies that exploit prison labor. You mentioned a few of them: Whole Foods, Wendy's, Walmart, Victoria's Secrets, UPS, United Airlines, Boeing. You've got a number of companies on these pages.
Yeah.
Can you talk more about that?
There are a lot. It's engrossed in our society. This is companies call this the best kept secret. This is the way that you can still have that Made in America stamp and still have a sweatshop at the same time. So we have these sort of sweatshop inhumane conditions right here on American soil. And that's because we've allowed there to be a free labor source. We've allowed this system of slavery to evolve and to persist into what it is now. These companies take advantage of prisoners' labor in a multitude of ways. We've heard reports about the firefighters fighting fires in California for $2 a day. Like I said, these fast food companies have these prisoners making their uniforms and their cutlery, sewing apparel, working in call centers, cleaning up oil spills for these gas companies. They're doing often remedial work and sometimes life damaging work. Some work is damaging to their health, like cleaning up oil spills and fighting fires with not the appropriate equipment to do so, and being paid for wages that are just offensively low when a firefighter is actually paid $35 an hour, and we've got the same capable type of human fighting a fire for $2 an hour. That's just blatant disrespect when a phone call costs $3.50 for 15 minutes. It is slavery, and even if we do put a few pennies in their pocket for these hours of work that they're doing, it doesn't support them, and that money is immediately going back into the system. Immediately. There's no way that it can be saved for a life on the outside in the future, especially when 55% goes towards restitution, and then often criminals are still paying restitution when they get out of prison. They're still paying the state. So it's slavery in every sense of the word, and that's what it's called in the Constitution, and that's what it is.
Bilal, Newsweek has a piece about 3,400 people behind bars in California are currently fighting fires for $2 a day and then an additional dollar per hour when the fighting is active fire.
Yeah, it always amazes me that a lot of folks may be on the conservative spectrum, how they support prisons and actually support the treatment of the prisons, and they live in these areas where these fires are happening. We have hundreds of prisoners out there fighting fires for $1 to $2 a day, and as Imani mentioned, not protected, not give adequate equipment to protect them, but they're fighting those fires and they're putting those people's, they're risking their lives out there, just like the established firefighters. They're risking their lives and saving folks' property, right? And I like people, I always bring that up because I talk to some conservative types who support prisons and punishment, and I ask them where they live, and I, you know, and those fires break out, and I go, oh, that guy lives there. So people need to understand that what's going on. A lot of people don't know that it's prisons out there fighting, and prisoners producing wealth. Prisoners are producing wealth for McDonald's, JCPenney, Walmart, and that wealth is being appropriated by multi-billion-dollar corporation to create wealth for those stockholders, right? And the prisoners are being paid pennies a day, if anything. Most of the prisoners are not paid at all, and if they refuse to work, they can be placed in the hole or have more time added to their sentence.
When we're specifically talking about labor exploitation in California's prisons, this is a state run by Democrats. The prison union is very strong here. Who makes these decisions? I mean, who decided to pay firefighters who are in prison $2 a day?
Well, I'm sure that these are policies. These are policies, local, state, and federal, and they're up at that level, these policies, right? I'm not, I don't know the intricacies of that, but just knowing the involved in policy work, these policies are created. And Monty pointed out, they are actually created and promoted by the corporations. So corporations can make money. So a lot of these policymakers we know are in the pockets of these folks. Democrats, let's talk about that. Bill Clinton, and one of the demands is in there, repealing the Prison Litigation Act. Well, Bill Clinton, the Omnibus Crime Bill Act during the Bill Clinton era, took away instruments from prisoners to bring grievance against their conditions and treatment, right? It made it harder for them to sue in federal court. So we look at a correlation. Mm. When we look at prisons again, we talk about women is the largest growing segment. Okay. Young people are the largest growing segment. We're taking people outside, out of the community, at the peak of their reproduction cycles. Mm. You see what I'm saying? That's a form of genocide. That's a form of genocide. But we look at the correlations. Bill Clinton also, the Welfare Reform Act, right? This casted people to the, into the depths and the abyss of poverty. These crimes that people are committing are poverty crimes. The majority of prisoners right now are in there for nonviolent crimes. Mm. I said they're in there for survival crimes. And we can look at the correlation, the reforming, that Welfare Act. We can look at his anonymous crime bill. And we can see all of these things coming together, conversely coming together. So we have to look at that again. It's an exploitative system. Just like when the prisoners, well, the former slaves will be arrested for vagrancy laws or refusing to sign exploitative and harsh employment agreements with their former slave masters, and they were taken, put in prison. Angola Prison is a great example. Former plantation, it's still a plantation. And so we don't see very much changing in that aspect from slavery and prisons, right? It's an institution of slavery, and this is why they're making that demand. You know, I mean, prisoners should be paid just like anyone else that's on the outside of the walls for their labor. They should at least a prevailing wage. Prisoners are charged. Some prisons charge prisoners. And some folks said, well, there are places where prisoners are making $8 an hour. This is 2 years ago. Yes. But they've been charged 75% of that for their board and keep in the prisons.
Right.
Yeah. They're being paid to be in prison where they're supposed to be taken care of by the state. So we see that kind of thing. I just want to bring this out, too. We had a family member speak at the action on the 25th, and we wanted to emphasize to people that people who have family members incarcerated, those family members on the outside are also doing time. They passed under Pete Wilson, Governor Pete Wilson. I was seeing you, say, for instance, I'll send you $200 in to put on your books so you can spend it at commissary, buy soap, toilet paper, because they never give you enough toilet. They may give you one roll of toilet paper the last 2 weeks. Deodorant, food, because the food is going to be horrible in there, and that sort of thing.
And sanitary items for women.
Exactly, because women are now having to reuse sanitary napkins, the same one. Under Pete Wilson's administration, they placed a tax. So I send you $200. The prison would take 20% of that out. And they said they were taking it out for restitution. Well, the prisoners are not paying that restitution to the victims. Their family members are paying that restitution, and the family members have not even been convicted of a crime. So these are some of the schemes and the scams that are going on and where people are actually in Folsom. When I was in Folsom State Prison, I was a clerk. And they would have me falsify documents. They have what they call the prison welfare fund that they were taxing prisoners. And this went into buying dominoes and cards and recreational things for prisoners to keep them busy out on the prison yard. Basketballs, baseball, so forth, all of these types of things. Games, you know. I would write false requisitions. They had me fight false requisitions. The prison staff are taking this equipment to their soccer teams and Little League Pop Warner teams. And prisoners were paying for that. Where you supposed to have this prison welfare fund, right? Where you can help prisoners. And then they start charging prisoners for medical visits. You had to pay. So if you come out of a poverty environment on the street and you're in prison and you're making 3 cents an hour or not even that, you can't afford any of these things. Mm. So it just exacerbates that. So what we're doing is we're releasing people out, not trained, or some of them are trained by being in prison, but because of the discrimination of hiring former prisoners, we exacerbate that poverty. And right now we're examining the homeless-to-prison pipeline, where we're seeing people released from prison wind up homeless, and we see homeless people now being put into the criminal justice system.
I've been wanting to do a show about prisoners who are released in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, it's far from any city or bus stop. Mm-hmm. They've got no money.
Right.
And they're walking. They don't really know where they are. And in one case, you just brought this up. One woman was recently murdered.
Yes.
right?
Yes, Santa Rita Jail.
Santa
yeah.
Rita.
Yeah.
Is it how common is it that people are released in the middle of the night with nothing?
That wasn't unique, because when I was in Los Angeles, there was a case in Los Angeles a few years ago where a woman was released out of a sheriff's station. I can't remember where it was at, Calabasas somewhere. Very rural area, and she disappeared. Mm. And months later, they found her remains. She was released at an early, that type of thing, too. That's ludicrous. You know, it's barbaric, I believe. It's insensitive. There's indifference there. And those are the things that people are facing while they're locked up.
We have about 5 or so minutes left. Just quickly, Bilal, you brought up the Prison Litigation Reform Act, which I'm sure most people have not heard of. It makes it harder for people to file and win civil rights lawsuits in federal court. How has this affected people behind bars? How has it affected their lives?
Well, it's affected them tremendously, because this is where we're at right now, where they have to do this strike because grievances are not addressed, right? Because of this bill. Or they have kangaroo courts in prison. You can file a grievance and say that particular staff that you're filing that grievance on, that staff that's at that hearing and controlling the hearing. And those you're washed out. Nothing happens, right? And then you're retaliated against. So that's the other fight, too. I mean, it's great credit to the California Prison Hunger Strikes who were able to get over that hurdle, but that also comes with much support from the outside. You have to have support from the outside. Mm. And if it wasn't for that support coupled with that, you know, we'll still have folks lingering in these solitary confinements, which we still do, but at a greater extent.
Right. We're going to do a show with people who spent time in solitary in a couple months. As you said, the Prison Litigation Reform Act was a key part of the Clinton-era prison boom. And again, quickly, rehabilitation programs. We spoke briefly about this before. Amani, San Quentin is often held up as this model for rehabilitation because people from the community come in and volunteer. They've got writing workshops and things. But we have heard from a number of guests that these programs have been cut over the years. And in some prisons in California, there's no rehabilitation programs at all. What does it look like across the country, Amani?
Across the country, it's the same sort of trend. People are willing to go into prisons and give their expertise. I myself go into a juvenile detention center every week and teach poetry, and I've been doing that for 3 years. These are volunteer positions that people are eager to go in and do. They know what the problem is. They have expertise in different areas. They want to teach classes. They want to teach skills. Prisons, the people who are in charge of distributing these programs and managing these connections and keeping up with organizations and making schedules aren't being persistent in doing so. It's something that is being done more so in the juvenile system, because there is this idea that juveniles are rehabilitatable, but adults aren't. They aren't able to transform or make life progression or rehabilitate or seek learning opportunities, educational opportunities, and that's completely false. Even the most violent of offenders or with the most violent records can come to a point where they want to make a better life, learn something new, and anything can spark something in a prisoner to make them want to be rehabilitated, which is why these classes should be offered anyway. That could range from art classes to yoga to reading, doing book reports, to parenting classes, cooking classes, anything. Think about the diverse range of interests that any human being would have, and bring that catalog into a prison for our prisoners to be able to use and see, because they weren't introduced to those things most likely on the outside. Mm. So this is an opportunity to introduce them to those things and to spark those lights and to bring people in that can become mentors and form long-term relationships and bonds with that can lead to their growth and development. This is also an opportunity for prisoners who might not have a support on the outside. They can get support through a program, through a person that's coming in, volunteering their time to spend with prisoners. And this is a valuable aspect of a system that values rehabilitation over punishment. Mm. And when we start to see that shift from doing that, we know that we're on a downward spiral. We need to shift back in the other direction and bring these programs back in and demand that our correction system act out being corrective and valuing corrections and rehabilitation through bringing those programs back in.
We have about a minute left. How can people on the outside get involved? What would you say is most effective, Imani?
I'd say there are a few ways. Looking up an organization in your region through the endorsement list on SawariMe.org, there you'll find a list. There's over 300 organizations right now across the world, mainly in the United States, though, where you can connect with an organization and see, okay, what events are happening? How can I support the work that they're doing for prisoners? Then also boycotting companies that exploit prison labor. Vote with your dollar in this capitalist democracy and make the intentional choice to choose an alternative to the convenience, per se, choices that use prison labor. The only reason why they're so rich and have so many locations is because they exploit this prisoner class. So those would be two huge ways.
And what would you ask Bilal just briefly? What would you add just
briefly? I confer with Imani. I confer with Imani. I also would ask people to also educate themselves on this issue. Mm-hmm. I would also say folks that are out there rightfully protesting against the detention, or I should say kidnapping, of immigrant children by the this Trump administration, understand that and how that is correlated along with that. This is why we have 200 immigrant detainees now have joined the strike. Mm. And also, I forgot, Germany has also, some prisoners of Germany has also joined it. We know the Palestinians have issued a statement. The jailhouse lawyers issued a statement showing that correlation between the immigrant detention and prison. Some of the same companies, private prison companies that are detaining immigrants, also are operating prisons in this country.
Well, you can find the list of the corporations at yourcallradio.org. The prison strike runs through September 9th and will continue to follow this. The United States has 5% of the world's population, but accounts for 25% of the world's prisoners. 2.2 million citizens are currently behind bars. According to the Equal Justice Initiative, these are numbers from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, the annual cost of mass incarceration in the United States is $182 billion every single year. $182 billion every single year. Imani Sawari is the official outside media rep of Jailhouse Lawyers Speak. Imani, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Bilal Mafundi Ali is the coordinator of the Bay Area National Prison Strike Solidarity Committee and a longtime activist and organizer. Bilal, thank you for your work. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us here. Hi, Imani.
Thank you so much. And thanks to Laura Flynn for producing today's show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.